You're listening to the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast hosted by Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, and Brad Tarver. Evening, gentlemen. How's it going?
Hello, hello.
Good evening from Dallas.
Let's jump into stuff. So let's do some follow-up from last week. So we talked about cutting the cord and getting rid of cable altogether. It's been a recurring theme that we've talked about since the beginning. I finally went ahead and made the jump. I went ahead and canceled my Dish service this week. I've been using Sling for the last couple of weeks. I did sort of an overlap where I kept Dish for about a week while I was doing Sling. And I got my HD home run from Amazon, and it's been working fantastic. I have a Leaf HD antenna, paired those together, and I've been using the Plex DVR that's in beta, and it's worked really well. I do get a few glitches every once in a while. I think it's because my antenna doesn't have optimal placement. For the most part, it works pretty good. I tried it out with season 3's premiere of The Flash the other night on the CW, and I set it to record and came back and checked it at the end of the recording, and everything worked just fine. Recorded 1080p quality, had an MKV file when it was done. I could load it up into Machete and chop out the commercials really quickly. It worked amazingly. So far so good.
So what about subtitles?
Subtitles did not work, obviously, because you know I don't have any. I could have gone and got them off of OpenSubs or one of those, but you know, I haven't tried to enable closed captioning, but I guess I could do that if I really needed to. But all in all, I mean, no complaints for the price. You know, $30 for the antenna, $99 for the home run, $25 for the Get Channels app. Oh, that was the other thing that I did. So using the DVR, that was fine, but you can't watch the DVR in real time. That's sort of a limitation inside of the Plex DVR. You set things to record, you come back and check on them, and there you go. But last night I decided to watch Arrow. I'm being a big comic book fan, that's the CW is 90% comic book shows. So I decided to watch Arrow in real time on the Apple TV. And I got to say, the Get Channels interface is a little bit rudimentary, but it works. You can see what's currently playing. You see what's coming up for the next show, when it's going to start. And works remarkably well for me. But Jim, you didn't have very good results with your HD home run. Is that right? Tell us about that.
So yeah, I have a similar setup. I got the HD home run. I set it up with the Plex beta, and I also got the Get Channels app. The issue I was having is inside the Channels app, the television stations were pixelating really bad or breaking up. Whereas if I plug my antenna directly into my television, I don't have signal problems at all. I mean, never have signal problems with the antenna plugged into the TV. So I know you and I briefly discussed it. I said, I'm going to return the home run because it's not working. I still have it here because I wanted to play with the antenna a little bit more, maybe put a little higher on the window, just, you know, try to get it a more clearer spot. I mean, I'm 8 stories off the ground, so it should work fine. And again, it does work fine when plugged into the TV. So I don't know if there's an issue with my home run. I may go ahead and return it for just an exchange to give it one more shot, since we know this system is working for you. What I did see, I really liked as far as the Get Channels app, being able to never have to switch the input on my TV now. And to be able to do everything from within Apple TV, and also to have a guide within Apple TV. Whereas if I plug the antenna directly into the TV now, I don't have a TV guide to look at for stations. So it's kind of just, you know, if I want to find something, I just have to bounce around between the channels. So mine is still up in the air. Hopefully I can get this HD home run working. If not, I'm going to do a swap out and at least give it one more shot, because the Get Channels app, I really like, as far as not having to leave Apple TV for that interface. And then the Plex looks like it didn't have any problems picking up all my channels. I never got around to testing the DVR with Plex because I tried to get the home run working with just Apple TV and the Get Channels app. And since that didn't work, I plugged the antenna back into the TV. So we'll try that once I get the Get Channels app working.
I do want to throw out there, make sure that you've updated the firmware on the HD home run. when I first plugged it in, I bought the GitChannels app before I plugged the HD Home Run in. When I accessed it, and it probably did this for you too, but it's just something else to double check. I made sure to go out and it had the latest firmware on it. I was listening to Back to Work, and I heard Merlin Mann talking about it, and he said his pixelates every once in a while. So it's I don't think you're ever going to get perfectly glitch-free recordings, but I can tell you in watching Arrow the other night live, there was a couple of times where it would sort of pixelate and go out and then come back, but never more than like 2 or 3 seconds at a time, and probably didn't do it more than 3 or 4 times in the entire hour I watched. Certainly about as good as I ever got with satellite on a cloudy day. With the flash recording, that probably happened once or twice in the entire hour's recording. But, and again, it wasn't anything that marred the experience or was ruined. It was just like a, you know, couple seconds here or there, but overall it was fine.
The pixelation could be on the provider's end too, because I've been on cable before and gotten pixelation. And I don't know if that's related to because the hard drive is spinning in the DVR device so that you could do time shifts, or there's some jitter between that, or if it's truly something coming in over the air where it's related to either your RF cable or your actual antenna that you're using in this case. But it also makes me think that maybe there's some jitter in the internet feed they're receiving at the head end, because, you know, they get all those shows syndicated, and I'm guessing they're all sent over the internet. I guess they could be sent over big C-band type satellite feeds too. So it may not just be the HD Home Run part of it, because I get pixelization on the local PBS channel, the local PBS affiliate, but I don't get any pixelization on the NBC affiliate or the ABC affiliate.
In my case, with inside the GitChannels app, when I say pixelated, it was pixelated enough to where it's just constantly pixelated and you can't tell what you're looking at. It's just it's not static on the screen, but it's just a constantly, you know, messed up picture. The transfer is just not, you know, it's just not getting a good enough signal to do the transfer. My Apple TV was actually normally on Wi-Fi because it seems to work better with waking up and going to sleep and things like that on Wi-Fi. But I did go ahead and plug the Apple TV directly into the AirPort so that the HD Home Run and the Apple TV were plugged into the AirPort. And I saw the same results, whether it was Wi-Fi or both of them were on Ethernet. I hadn't actually tested the Apple TV on Ethernet with the latest OS update to see if the sleep problems gone away. And as far as this week goes, it seems the rest of the week now with it still plugged in, that seems to have kind of resolved itself with the tvOS update, so it seems to be working better for me on Ethernet with waking up.
Another thing I was going to say was, if you're experiencing some EMF, just because we think that Brian and I may think that you may be experiencing some EMF just either based on your building or something, you could always buy some shielded Ethernet cables so that it's all shielded between the AirPort and the HD Home Run and your Apple TV. And shielded Ethernet cables don't cost very much. They're just a couple of dollars more than non-shielded.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like you have either a defective unit or something weird going on that the rest of us don't. Either it's a bad unit or there's something going wrong. But I mean, I did notice occasionally, you know, if I plug the antenna directly into the TV, my NBC affiliate would be crystal clear. But if I plugged into the unit, it was not. And so I had to adjust the antenna until it was. So either there's something sensitive with the unit itself, or, you know, there's something definitely going on there. Plus, you know, it is taking that signal and doing something to it so that it's coming out the other side. It's doing, I don't want to say transcoding.
Oh, it's transcoding it. Well, maybe not then.
Yeah, it's doing something, and it's broadcasting it out over DLNA. So again, you saw the same behavior on whether it was Wi-Fi or Ethernet. All of my streaming devices and of course the HD Home Run that I bought are all Ethernet. So I never even thought about doing it over the Wi-Fi. You live in a much more congested place where there's a lot more people running their own hotspots, I'm sure, than I do. So that's why I was kind of surprised that you even did it over Wi-Fi at all. But again, you know, it's your mileage may vary, but I bet if you swap that unit out, you would see something different than what you were seeing before. It's just, at least that's what I think.
Yeah, I tend to agree with your first statement there that the HD Home Run is just a little more sensitive than the TV is. So that's why the issue is there. And so if I can, you know, I've never had to try to reposition the antenna since I've gotten it, because it just worked right off, you know, right out of the box. So I'll move the antenna around a little bit once I get some time. I just hadn't thought to mess with it this week. I've been watching Hulu and Netflix, so I really hadn't tried anything. But I've still got some time before I have to return the home run. So hopefully it'll work out. You know, the Get Channels app is definitely worth it if everything else can come.
And it's $25 for the Apple TV.
Yeah, it's $25 for the Apple TV. It's $15 for iOS. And the thing is, too, you can only watch it on your local network. You can't be in a hotel and stream it over the internet to yourself. So there are limitations there. And my own use case, though, honestly, it wouldn't even bother me at all, because most of what I want to see is on Hulu anyway. If there's something that's a recent TV show, you know, with Sling, I do get Fox over Sling Live, so I can watch that from anywhere. And not being able to see NBC, CBS, or ABC in real time, not really an issue for me. Again, because I can always remote into my home system, record whatever it is I want to see, and then stream it to myself if I really want to do it, which, you know, in most cases I wouldn't, but it's still an option. But I've been really happy since getting rid of this. I think I'm ending up right now between Sling, and I still haven't canceled my CBS All Access subscription, so that's like $10 a month. But my Dish bill was like $130 a month, and I barely watched it. And now I'm down to Sling with both options, and CBS is like $60 or $70 a month. It's
yeah, you're half the cost for just as much television,
and it's more convenient, right? I rarely watched anything live anyway, so everything I watched was off the DVR. And if I had my preference, if let's say there was something I wanted to see on Fox, I would always watch it on Hulu Plus the next day. I never even really watched over the DVR, so that was really kind of a waste of money. So I'm glad I finally did that.
Welcome to the cord cutters.
Well, we'll see how long it sticks. I know that I'm still waiting for AT&T to turn on that fiber they buried in my yard 6 months ago. If they come through and there's a DirecTV promotion tied with it, I may take the plunge again. I don't know. We'll see. I don't really have any motivation to do so, but I wouldn't rule out returning to it. I didn't hate it. It was just the cost for what I was getting. It wasn't very good. So, and then again, DirecTV is supposed to be launching their Sling competitor, you know, pretty soon anyway. So let's see what else happened this week. So Google had their big announcement, and they pretty much they invented the Amazon Echo, the iPhone 6, the Eero, and the HTC Vive. So I don't want to be too snarky there, but not to undercut the things that they announced, but Google Home, I don't know if it feels more like a Me Too device, right? Amazon really beat everyone to the punch with what they have, and everyone seems to love it. So I don't really see, if you already have something like an Echo, why you would want a Google Home.
Well, Brad has an Echo. I haven't used one, but it's funny to me that when the Echo first came out, at least for me and the people I spoke with, everybody was like, what do you use this thing for? Why is it worth, you know, $200? What can we do with this? And now that it's out there and everybody sees the things you can do with it, you know, it seems really neat. It's really smart. You know, it learns, you know, from you to do the things you want it to do. So I think it's just funny how that, you know, it's almost like Amazon was ahead of themselves. When they announced it, nobody really knew what they needed it for, but now we're realizing why.
They created it and they didn't know what they had, and then they add the smarts later.
Well, I think the smart thing that Amazon did was have the integrations. They opened it up, and that really helped them out a lot. If you think about it, Amazon doesn't offer, like, at least to mainstream consumers, you can do it through AWS if you're on the beta, but I've used it and it sucks. Their email and calendaring and whatnot. So they don't really have, they're not providing something like Gmail. They're not providing a lot of the things that people depend on as a consumer facing service. So having those integrations, opening it up, and then people taking advantage of that. So I would still maintain when it was first announced, and I would be surprised if initially the Amazon's biggest use case for it was, oh, this will be an easy way for people to order things they want or see what the weather is, right? It was, I think they were savvy enough to realize that their phone ambitions were sort of dead on arrival. They weren't going to have a phone that anyone was going to buy, right? It flopped. You want that assistant. You want people to use it. Google's not going to put you front and center on theirs. Microsoft isn't going to put you front and center on their devices. Of course, Apple's not going to, you know, kick Siri out of the way. So what do? You pretty much had to make a device. And as useful as that was, it wasn't until you could turn off your lights with it or change your thermostat or open your garage door, those types of things. And that was a lot of third-party integrations that, you know, just by the basis of the fact that Amazon didn't have anything natively to offer in those cases, other people stepped up and did it. And that's where the real utility comes in handy, I think.
Yeah, I don't want to trigger anybody's Alexa, but, you know, it's like, hey, I need some toilet paper. That was like the, you know, that was the use case when that first thing first went online. And now people are doing all kind of stuff with it. So I would like one, but since I'm sort of tied into the Apple ecosystem, I would really like it to work with Apple Music. And because it doesn't, I think that's the primary reason that I haven't joined yet.
I did buy an Echo Dot, which will ship in about 2 weeks, I guess. And being a Prime customer, you still have access to Prime Music. I think you do Prime as well. So you do have Prime Music you could use. Since Brad and I both still do Spotify, we have the ability to integrate with Spotify there as well. Just the other things that they tie into. I'm way deep in the Apple ecosystem too, but it's like, you know, for $50, I'll give it a shot. $100, I wasn't really prepared to take the dive into a Dot. And I'm still not too keen on having a box that's sitting there listening to me all the time, but I'm willing to give it a shot though. How are you liking your Alexa there, Brad?
I have no complaints. No matter what I do, it can pretty much hear me from any room. I've got it in my kitchen, which is in between my office and we have two living rooms, like a sort of like a parlor and then a family room, but it's in between those and the kitchen and all that. So it's sort of centered in the main part of the house. So from any room in the main part of the house, I can say, set a timer or play this music or, you know, any number of things. I mean, just the other day, I think we were watching TV and I said, how old is Tom Brokaw? And it said, Tom Brokaw is 76 years old. So it's just one of those things, kind of like the backup camera you referenced a few weeks ago, was you don't necessarily need it, but once you've gotten it, you almost can't live without it.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, and that's what I'm hoping the Echo Dot is for me. I'm sure that Google Home will probably be open like that. I think Amazon has sort of set the expectation as to what that should do. But given how things, you know, having these Internet of Things devices, it's still been kind of a walled garden type thing. You're seeing people, manufacturers that make stuff, and it either works with HomeKit or it works with Nest or one of those. But it's there's still not a universal standard where you can integrate with all these things. I think that's going to be a thing that causes problems. But I do want to see how it ends up tying into the greater ecosystem. If, because Google makes those types of devices, if they end up making more devices along the same lines, right? You have the thermostat, you have the smoke alarm, and you have the camera, but there's not a lot of stuff that Nest makes that really ties into this. Maybe if they end up, going full bore and releasing a whole bunch of other devices that go along with it, that would make it more compelling to kind of use, but we'll see how that goes. The other things that I wanted to touch on, the Daydream View, you know, I guess that's kind of neat. I'm not really keen on strapping a smartphone to my face to make a VR environment, so I don't know. I don't really care about that. The Google Wi-Fi is kind of cool. It's really sad that you got these startups like Eero that make this really cool device, but it's a little bit high priced. Then Google comes along and announces the same thing at a much lower cost. So I think that'll end up being a success. I'll put on my tinfoil hat for a minute. I'm not too, I don't know that I would necessarily want Google on my network. I mean, I don't know that they're going to be collecting anything, but it just feels kind of creepy that a company whose main job is to organize all the data in the world would then sit there and see every network connection, or could see every network connection you make outbound.
Indexing every single thing you do in the house.
Yeah, that would make me nervous too. You're just asking for it if you do that, I think.
Exactly. I mean, I'm sure they wouldn't do that, of course, wink, wink, but I don't know. It kind of makes me nervous.
I see the Daydream View sort of like the, in two ways, actually. On one side, it comes across as Google Glass, so it's sort of vaporware type of thing, and you sort of blow it off. On the other hand, I think it would be cool for these kids who, you know, you constantly see them, you know, in tow behind their parents, and all they're doing is staring at their screen, which, you know, obviously they couldn't do that if they're walking along and following you through a shopping mall or the grocery store or something, because they're just going to run into something. But I just think the idea of it being a toy for kids is kind of cool.
It is, but it'll end up being a science experiment that doesn't really sell anything. Like, even the Oculus and the HTC Vive, which are both high-end professional units, aren't selling in great numbers. Having this little, and you know, there's already things out there that you can get. There was one on Amazon a couple months ago that was like $79. That's basically the same thing. It's neat, but you know, it's not gonna end up being a big deal, I wouldn't think. The really interesting thing to me though is the Pixel and what it's gonna mean for Google's Android partners. I mean, it's weird to see Google in a position kind of like Microsoft has found itself in, where it ends up competing with the people that or competing with the companies that it depends on to produce their devices. The sort of differentiating factor, though, is that the Google Assistant is only going to be found on the Pixel, at least for now. So that's how they're setting themselves apart. So not only are they competing with their partners, they're also putting the differentiator into their own product. And Ben Thompson over at Stratechery has a really great take on all of that. It's really an interesting read. And he likens that move to the falling out that Apple and Google had when Google put in turn-by-turn directions into Google Maps and wouldn't let iOS have it. Very good read. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. It's really worth your time to take a look at. But it does seem kind of strange that they would do that as a way to sell those phones. The other thing that's kind of weird is that Samsung just bought Viv, which was the AI startup founded by the same people that made Siri. So it looks like, you know, it's kind of weird timing if this gets announced right around the same time that Google announces, hey, we're building our own phone and we're going to have this assistant into it, and none of the other competitors can do that. So it's, I don't know if it's sort of a passive aggressive response from Samsung, but it seems kind of strange that they would do that. What do you guys think about that?
It's that whole sort of shooting yourself in the foot sort of scheme, if you would. And I never really understood why people do that, why Microsoft does it to themselves or whoever does it to whomever. It's hard to explain. I don't know if that's just what people think business should be like or something. Like, they think, well, here we've got this, let's invite somebody in to help us out, and then later on we'll just push them out the door because we'll supposedly innovate based on their ideas.
They're pricing it at the same price point as the iPhone. The iPhone is considered kind of a premium product, at least compared to similar Android phones, which usually sell for a bit less. Not only are they making what they're sort of positioning in the same pricing scheme as a premium product, but they're also putting that differentiator in there to make it more appealing, I guess. Personally, for most of the people that I know that go Android, I don't see them going for something that's priced the same as an iPhone. I really don't see it. In my informal survey amongst my Android using friends, none of them are excited about this phone at all, which I think if I were an Android user, I would actually be buying that because I'd want the stock Android experience. The other thing that's kind of strange to consider is that Google has not been good at tech support. They have not been a very good customer-facing organization when it comes to the things that they sold hardware-wise. So right now it's a Verizon exclusive. You can buy it at Best Buy. You're going to be counting on Best Buy and Verizon to do your tech support for you. And I think the lesson to be learned here is, you look at Apple. Apple really didn't come into its own when it came back from the dead from the 90s until they opened their retail presence. I don't know about you guys. Whenever I go into an Apple store, the Genius Bar is constantly packed. Even when I need to make an appointment, there's always people there. More often than not, they're dealing with iPhone issues. They're not dealing with Mac issues most of the time. I've seen a few of those in there. Never really see a lot of people complaining about their iPad, but they're in there about their phones like crazy. And would you want somebody from Best Buy or Verizon really being your front line for your product? I don't know that I necessarily would. Definitely not. It seems like it's bound to fail.
I think there's really two issues at play here. The first being that, you know, Google and Microsoft and what they're trying to do now is straight up having to copy the Apple model, whereas they control everything about their product. They control the operating system. They control the hardware. They control, for the most part, selling it through those retail stores you were just talking about, or even through the carriers, where when the iPhone first came out, I know it was, you know, notorious for the things that AT&T had to agree with before Apple signed with them, you know, as far as, you know, the selling of the phone, the marketing of the phone, you know, you can't put your junk on the phone, you know, all that kind of stuff that they've controlled, you know, very, very tight control. And that's why a lot of people like Android, is because, you know, that tight control is not there. So, you know, that's kind of the one thing that I see why they're doing it, because they're trying to control the whole model, because you're going to make your money off the hardware that you're making. The problem for both Google and Microsoft is that they're not going to sell enough hardware to be able to have the margins like Apple does, because it's buying so much RAM and so many screens and so, you know, all the parts of an iPhone or an iPad or you know, not necessarily a Mac, you know, that they're selling so many of those that they get very good prices on all the components. And so there's not enough Microsoft phones being sold or the Surface tablets, I wouldn't think. And then now, you know, Google with this phone, I don't see it becoming a big seller because of the reasons you gave. And then the second part of that is that to me, most people that have Android phones, they don't have them because they want an Android phone. It's just, this is the phone I can afford. I don't really care what my phone is. I just need a phone that does these, you know, couple of things that I use it for. So there's just not this huge demand to go out and say, I want this high-end Android phone like there is for people who rush out to get the newest, bestest iPhone that they can get their hands onto.
Yeah, I don't think you're see any lines outside the Verizon store or Best Buy that are comparable to what you see for Apple on a launch day. And I don't think that's ever going to happen in this particular case. It kind of seems like, why bother at this point? But I'm curious to see how this ends up shaking out for them. Something that that Ben Thompson brings up in that Stratechery article that's really, really smart is that, you know, Google's made its money on search through ads, right? That's where their revenue comes from. As we move from mobile into the age of the AI, which that was the distinctions, I guess, that he gave in terms of the evolution, right? We had the desktop, we had mobile. The next stop is going to be the intelligent assistance, right? It's really going to be where the future is. Where do you put the ads? How do you put that in there so that it's an experience the user would end up tolerating? I guess if they get into that market where they're getting some money back from the hardware, that'll help offset it. But until he mentioned that, I never really thought about that, right? We knew things like Alexa were coming, and it's clear one of its utilities. What do? Hey, buy me this, and your Alexa will go out and get it for you, right? It'll buy it from Amazon. When Apple finally gets around to putting out something similar, I'd be very surprised if you couldn't buy stuff through them, right? They're already doing the things with Apple Pay. And I know Google has comparable things, but it's really not their business model, right? Their business model is centered around ads. So, you know, again, I think that was one of the things that he theorizes is the reason they're doing this is they need revenue from hardware sales and other channels they haven't historically pursued to make up for that lack of revenue that's expected to happen when you don't have ads anymore or you can't serve them up. So it's definitely interesting, and I will be watching very closely to see how well this sells and what Samsung ends up doing with Viv. Inevitably, you know, the assistant's going to end up in the rest of Android. Other phones will get it in time, but it's always funny to see how Samsung, who seems to make the most money off of Android, deals with their relationship with Google and sort of the things that they try to do. It's kind of a weird, contentious partnership. I think it'll be a win though if the Pixels don't explode.
I agree. If you can make an Android phone that doesn't explode, you're winning.
And even the replacement phones, the notes are exploding too. So that's something.
So embarrassing.
The funny thing is, if this had happened to Apple, Samsung would have been all over that you would have seen commercials by now where, you know, it would have been just, and Apple hasn't done anything to comment on it.
If this would have happened to Apple, we would be having congressional hearings about phones blowing up and how it's affecting airline flights and travel and this huge list of issues that it might be causing.
The world is imploded because your Apple iPhone exploded, and then, you know, it's just the whole world stops.
Yeah, it really would be it really is a weird double standard, because you know that would have happened. But anyway, so Amazon announced this week that Prime members now get unlimited reading on any device, and it looks like they're also doing some audiobooks or some audio content as part of that as well. I was perusing through some of those options, and I'm sure it'll get better over time. Right now, I didn't really see a lot of things that appealed to me. The magazines look kind of interesting. I didn't see any comics that really appealed to me. What do you guys think about the unlimited reading, and have you taken a look at the selection and how it appeals to you?
There's been several Kindle books that I've wanted to read in the past, and I see that the book may be $4 or $5, but it's also available on unlimited previous to today's announcement, and I would just go ahead and buy the book anyway, but just because I never really thought about signing up for the unlimited service. So I can see where there would be other publishers of comics or even other magazines eventually jump on board with allowing their content to be read under the unlimited the Prime Kindle unlimited sort of deal. I just think it's just a matter of, you know, assimilation, if you will.
So does this actually add the Kindle Unlimited to your Prime account? I thought it was just like certain unlimited books or certain magazines. I mean, because there's a huge list of items under Kindle Unlimited, because I subscribed for a couple of months and I just didn't find myself reading as much as I thought, and I canceled it. But there was all kind of things under Kindle Unlimited, especially a lot of self-published type technical books that I found interesting. I just wasn't using them as much, so I discontinued the service. For this one, I looked, and
yeah, it's,
you know, with some books, and I looked at the magazines, and I think I had it sent the most recent issue of Baseball Digest to my iPad just to kind of check it out. But that's the only thing I saw that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's not unlimited. It's just those have a designation of Prime. I think there's some overlap. Some of the titles are available through Prime and unlimited. But it looked like they had definite Prime designations for those things that were part of the Prime program, unless I completely misunderstood that, because some things were marked unlimited, some things were marked Prime. I only looked at the things that were marked Prime. So, Brad, did you play with that at all? Did you see that distinction?
No, I didn't notice that difference. I guess I just didn't look closely enough.
I do wonder how Amazon makes a profit on Prime customers, right? It started out with shipping, then they added video, and now I think they added Twitch on there as well. After they bought Twitch, now you get access to that through Prime. Just tons of stuff. I don't know if I necessarily get that. I think I know from a purchasing perspective, if I'm buying something on Amazon, I will often pay, you know, even when it says this is available from other sellers with potentially lower prices, I usually don't care. I buy the one that's Prime just because I know I'll have it in 2 days. So I'm guessing maybe that plays into it, makes you buy more, I suppose. But when it comes to other aspects like the reading and the video and the other things that are just sort of these ancillary services, I figure that it would kind of be a losing proposition for Amazon, but I'm not really sure. Have you guys read anything on that, on what the profitability is on Prime customers?
I would like to know for myself, because you do bring up a good point about that. I feel like they probably, people try to capitalize on the fact that you can get next day shipping for $3.99. And granted, it's per item, but if I need to order a computer part that I need tomorrow, I can have it by lunchtime tomorrow, and it's only $3 for overnight shipping. If you get that through anywhere else, through some sort of other retailer or e-tailer, you know, you're going to pay $20 for overnight shipping.
Well, in some cases, I spend an insane amount just buying things that, you know, I've made like 60 orders this year from Amazon of various price points. So I know that there's some profit being generated on that side. It's just, I wonder when you see them making these television shows that are, you know, not cheap to produce, whether or not I watch them, or, you know, offering a free music subscription and throwing in the free Twitch thing, even though I'll probably never use it. Those types of things, at some point that has to cut into that profitability.
I didn't even know about the Twitch thing. Not that I would use it, but I didn't even know about that yet. That was just one of those things they picked up that I didn't see the news on. I tend to think, so they've went from $79 to, I think it's now $99, you know, and they've added music streaming and they've added videos. And I think if people used the video service as much as they used Netflix, or they used the music service as much as they use Spotify or Apple, that it would cost Amazon a little more. But it's almost like they're throwing those things out there, and people either just don't even think about it because they originally got Prime for the shipping. You know, and some people, I definitely know some people use it for the movies, and you can stream some stuff on there. And if you have kids, there's a lot that you can, you know, stream there. And that's always, you know, a valuable proposition for people with kids. I order a lot of stuff off Amazon because the prices are good, and I know the... the shipping is, you know, free or cheap. I don't get the overnight shipping very much, but I think if I did, even if I got overnight shipping now in Dallas, I think Amazon would actually make money on me paying $4 for that shipping because they have the distribution centers here for almost all their products. So, and then they also have their own delivery here for almost all the products. So, I think even if I paid $4 at this point, Amazon would actually be able to pay for the ship. You know, that would be enough to pay for the shipping of that item. So they're going to make a little bit off that $4 for me anyway, in a bigger city.
Which may be true too for Brian in Atlanta.
Definite possibility. I didn't even realize. Now, whenever I buy stuff, it seems like it always comes from South Carolina or Tennessee for some reason. But I have a client I was working with south of the airport here in Atlanta, and I drove by, and there are huge Amazon warehouses down there, shipping and distribution centers, even though nothing I ever seem to order seems to originate from there. So I'm not really sure, but you know, I would have to think so. But yeah, there are things that you mentioned, just some of those perks that I wasn't thinking about, like a pantry or, you know, Brad mentioned the Prime Now. There's coupons. They used to do the photo storage. I don't know if they still do. I don't think they do unlimited photo storage anymore as part of Prime. I think they make you pay the $60 a year for the full unlimited storage for everything. They don't make the differentiation anymore. I think it's just 5 gigs now or something. But
I use Subscribe and Save for all kind of stuff for ordering. And that's got a little bit different shipping. So the shipping is still free, but it's not like 2-day shipping when you do Subscribe and Save, which is still fine because it's just monthly items, you know, kitchen and bathroom, things like that, vitamins. So with the shipping in Dallas, it's an actual Amazon shipper. I can't even track it in apps like Deliveries on my phone because it's got an Amazon tracking number. So to track it in Deliveries, I actually have to add my Amazon account to Deliveries with the order number, and that's how it does the tracking. So it's a distinct Amazon shipping number that I get now for almost anything I order that shipped from Dallas.
Interesting, because all mine are either LaserShip or UPS or the Postal Service still. So yeah, that's definitely something you got there. For the Prime Now, they don't offer it where I live, but they have to drive through my area to deliver it to the places where they do offer it. So that's extremely frustrating to me, but it's still kind of an interesting service. You are seeing sort of an LTE issue with your iPhone, Jim. So you might be seeing that LTE connectivity bug we talked about last week. What's been going on with your phone?
I don't think it's the exact issue that people have been describing is what I've been seeing. It could just be quirks with LTE in Dallas. I'm just not used to it yet. My first week with the phone, I was traveling for work and I was in St. Louis and the phone worked great just because St. Louis or AT&T in St. Louis where I work is not that great. So for me, it was like, wow, this is working, you know, amazingly. Back in Dallas now since last Thursday, so a week now, I have seen some times where my signal will deteriorate slowly and then go to a 3G signal. And anytime I notice it doing that, I can toggle the airplane mode. And when it comes back, it goes immediately to full strength LTE. So it's kind of similar to the bug that we've seen online. The other thing is I did go to a concert last Saturday night and I was really excited to be able to test the phone out there just to see how it worked as compared to AT&T. And it really didn't work at all, but it was a packed house, completely sold out show in a big venue that's like a big metal building kind of venue. So it didn't surprise me that it didn't work there, but I was really hoping that it did because I've seen that in the past where I've been places with my AT&T phone in Dallas and I couldn't get messages to send or anything, yet people in Verizon were able to get a signal. And I think in this case, it was just too many people all in the same place, so it wasn't working. But so we'll keep going. We'll keep testing. I've had some slight issues going down the road where it seems like a connectional timeout. It's not necessarily it's gotten slower or even that it'll still say LTE, but it just seems more like a routing issue than it does necessarily a phone issue with the connection.
Interesting. That's pretty weird. The other thing in the news this week was the UK consumer magazine Which? Which, of course, us being a US-based show, we're not really familiar with. But they made headlines over here saying that the iPhone 7 has awful battery life compared to its peers. I have not seen this myself. Then again, I'm rocking the Plus, so I wouldn't see it. But Jim, you spent most of this past Sunday, out and about doing your thing. What did you see? I went on a pretty long walk Saturday morning. I guess I got out to the trail about 10 or 11 a.m. and I walked about 3 hours, a little over 3 hours. It's actually further than I had anticipated walking. I walked out about a couple of miles, and then coming back in, I actually passed up a turn. So I walked a little bit extra. And my battery was at 100% when I started walking, and it was about 10% when I finished. So that's a little over 3 hours. But that was constant use of Bluetooth headset with Pokemon running in the background and the bright sun. So the display was 100% brightness, you know, the whole time. And I was pretty impressed with that. I actually brought a battery, extra battery, and I had left it in the car because I'm just like, you know, first off, I didn't necessarily plan on walking that far. It was just a really beautiful day at the lake, and I just kind of kept walking. And I was able to walk out and walk back. I've been at home mostly for the last week, so I haven't necessarily been able to test. But just under normal conditions where my other phone would be way down by 10 a.m. in the morning before I would have to plug it in. With this one, I'm definitely not seeing that. So I personally think it's doing fine. If anything, I just think we're all using our phones for so much more now. We're doing so many more things with them because we can, you know, and then you got games like a Pokemon where, you know, it just wants to run all the time. You just, a little device like this, to me, it's not necessarily made for that kind of battery punishment, but I think it holds up pretty well.
Now, when you checked your usage, didn't Pokemon take up like 67% of your battery? Wasn't that the thing that chewed it up?
So that was the previous weekend. That was the very first weekend that I got it. I activated the phone on Saturday morning, and then by Sunday, I was just like, man, this seems to be running down quicker than I thought it would, you know, just because it was a brand new phone and I'm, you know, I've had the other phone for a year and it just, the battery was bad. And so you said, hey, check this. And when I sent it to y'all, I think it was like either 2/3 or 3/4 of the usage was Pokemon Go. And I think your comment was just, okay, shut up.
Yeah, that's kind of funny. I don't think if I was into that, I could use it without a battery case if I was into Pokemon.
It definitely chews up the battery. I mean, because it's using the GPS. It's got game graphics going. It always wants to be on. So, like I said, these are really small devices in our hands. And the fact that it can do what it can already, you know, I think it's doing a pretty good job. I think with the last phone, the issue was that I had already had the phone for about 9 months before Pokemon came out. And then when it came out and I started to play that and the battery was already not good. And then I add this game on top of, you know, an already 9-month-old battery that, you know, had been put through the ringer. It was just really, really bad. So it prompted people to complain about the battery. I think it does pretty good. It definitely, I could use it all day long when I'm traveling for work now without having to plug it in. Now, at the end of the day, I might be, you know, down in the 10 to 20% range. But if I can last all day while I'm working before I have to plug it in, I think that's pretty good.
So it looks like Facebook this week launched a Craigslist competitor called Marketplace. And since you are our resident Craigslist heavy user, have you given Marketplace a shot? Do you plan on it? What do you think about it?
I have not. I've actually kind of been avoiding Facebook over the last month or so, just personal reasons. It seems to stress me out more than it provides me entertainment these days. So I actually don't have the Facebook app even on my phone now. I have the Friendly app on there if I ever wanted to check anything. Is it Friendly Plus, something like that? We can put a link in the show notes. But it's,
yeah, Friendly Plus, it's great.
Yeah, it's the one you put me on to a year or two ago, at least. And so I'll fire that up if I want to get into Facebook to do something. But I don't have Facebook or Messenger even installed on my phone right now, and haven't for probably a month.
I do see a fair number of people who will be like, hey, I'm selling something, anybody interested? And they've done that on their timeline for forever. So I guess this is a natural evolution of being able to do that. If you want to sell something and sell it to your friends, I guess it makes or even sell it to people just nearby. I guess it's kind of a natural extension. I think it'll end up being useful.
Does it work like a public type thing to where you set your audience? So it's not just your friends, you would set it to a public audience or even a region?
So honestly, I haven't tried it out yet, but since, you know, it does have your location, I would imagine that that when you go into the marketplace, you can see what's for sale. I think I'm going to spin it up later just to see if I see things other than the people that I'm friends with selling things. So it does seem kind of like an obvious thing. Like, I wonder why they weren't doing this before. The screenshots that I've seen from it, though, look exactly like what you would expect if Facebook and Craigslist melded. So somebody's selling a chair, a local pickup only, and you have a make offer button or message seller. And then it shows the seller information. It shows where they are on the map and any mutual friends you might have and whether or not even the seller is very responsive or not very responsive. So I don't know. And actually, if I were the type of person that used Craigslist on the regular, I would probably give this thing a shot because it looks actually pretty neat.
Seems like it's got some of the best of Craigslist along with throwing a little bit of eBay where you have ratings and things like that. Because with Craigslist, you don't have that. And I buy and sell all kind of stuff on Craigslist. Just because I like to, you know, have the newest and bestest of stuff. And so if I buy some electronic gadget, I'll throw it out there. I think I've sold a couple of phones on Craigslist. I sold iPads. That's where I bought my AirPort Extreme that I have now. Is I just kind of finally decided, hey, I wanted one and the prices were way down. So that's where I bought that. And I've bought a couple other things on there. So, but, you know, it sounds like the kind of the melding of the two. And then if you can direct it to where your friends could see it or public, you know, in a certain area, then I definitely can see where it provides a use case. But I'm not sure for Facebook what that provides unless it wants to see what you're buying and selling and what other people are buying and selling to try to better target ads to you. I guess that's the use case. Can y'all think of anything else?
No, I think you nailed it. I just fired up the marketplace on my phone. I do have the app installed right now. And it's showing me everything that everyone is selling around me right now in my neighborhood within a 40-mile radius. I can change it and do something like, let's say, 10 miles, which I've just done as I'm sitting here talking. And boom, it pops up everything that's in a 10-mile radius. So not necessarily your friends, but it looks like you can limit that criteria if you really want to. So kind of nifty. I mean, this seems like an obvious thing that I'm actually surprised it's taken them this long to add. This is kind of cool.
Now I want to check it out.
Yeah, I believe me, if there was ever a reason to put the real one back on there, this would be it for you. Just you know, do it now and just avoid the timeline until after the election. But so let's talk.
Browsing Craigslist is just so much fun. I just, there's so much crap on there. It's just fun to see what people are selling. I don't know. It's stupid addition.
We could not be more different. I want to click on something and have it come to my house from a delivery person. I do not want to go out, talk to somebody, buy it, meet up at a coffee shop and like that is like the seventh circle of hell in describing.
And possibly have to haggle over it.
Yeah, I mean, this is, unless it is something that is incredibly rare or an incredibly good deal that I couldn't pass up, there is, I don't know. It's just, it's so completely not who I am. Like, if I use eBay, I haven't used an auction in years. I do buy it now or nothing because I want this transaction to be, I click a button, I give you my credit card, it comes to my house, end of transaction. I do not want to go and talk to anyone. I don't want to interface with anyone. I don't want to haggle with anyone. Let me click a button. Where do I click to just get it to my house without having to talk to a single soul? And I am sold. That's why I always give you a hard time offline about Craigslist, because it's just, you might as well be describing going to the moon to me for as much as I can relate to it.
Oh, I love it. You meet some fascinating people. I mean, when I got my original 6 Plus, I sold that on Craigslist, and then I bought the 6 from some, you know, that I replaced on Craigslist, and then sold that 6 on Craigslist. You know, like I said, I've sold iPads and bought other things. It's, you know, you've got to be able to kind of sort through. I actually don't like shopping with dealers on Craigslist. I always say, like, just show me sales by owner only, just because the dealer stuff is always just a bunch of, you know, they're a bunch of hype, and, you know, they always put a bunch of products on one page. You know, I just want somebody selling one thing, the exact thing I want, and, you know, meet them at Starbucks and, you know, swap them $40 and get what I came for.
So let's see, we're getting close to an hour. Let's talk about that app that got pulled this week, Phonies, the sticker pack that allowed you to fake responses from other people and stick them in a message to make it look like they said something that they really didn't. Seemed harmless enough, but you look at this and at first blush, it's like there is no way that Apple's going to allow this to stay in the store. So I'm actually surprised that it was in there for as long as it did. You bought it, right?
Yeah, so I figured I'd drop the 99 cents last weekend when I saw the story. It seems like a neat enough app, and it turns out that they actually did pull the app yesterday. So to me, that there was kind of some question as whether they would capitulate and change the app to make the bubbles more cartoony and change the font, or whether they would just let it get removed and the people who've actually paid for it will have it until it doesn't work anymore, you know, whenever time that becomes. It's a neat little app. I think it was a great idea. I am shocked that Apple approved it. The thing is, there's only about 20 messages you can drop up. So it's not like you can write anything. You can't make a custom sticker and drop it into somebody's timeline. So, you know, unless you can find the perfect opportunity to drop in, you know, oops, I just pooped myself in somebody else's timeline, then the app is not quite as useful. You know, there's a couple of other ones that are kind of funny, like the sports team I pull for sucks. You know, a lot of them are more for, it seems like they're directed at parents and kids. Like, our kids are so lucky to have you, or you make this parenting thing look easy. You know, things like that. You're the coolest parent I know. So there's only about 20 of them. You know, you are so smart. You're my hero. You know, things like that is you can stick them in a message and it makes it look like the other person sent it. The other thing is, so if you're going to put the sticker on that says you're so smart, if the message you're trying to cover up is any longer than that, then it's going to be readily apparent that you stuck a sticker on top of a longer message because the other one's going to be behind it. So you could only really apply the sticker in places where the other message would be completely covered, or it kind of loses its, you know, loses its gimmick.
So is it to fake screenshots so that you could say, hey, my boss said I was really smart. Check it out. Look at this. Or, I mean, I don't understand the real purpose of it.
So basically, it makes it look like you sent a message to somebody else when you really didn't. So I just sent you and Brian a message on iMessage. Reply to me back with just anything, and I'll show you what the sticker does. And, you know, like I said, it's very simple. It was 99 cents. You know, I don't feel like I'm really breaking the bank here by, you know, helping these folks out. I mean, they were smart enough to do the app, and they were smart enough to somehow get it on the App Store. So,
all right, we sent you something. Now fire it back.
So you can see what I did there. Basically, I just overlaid what Brad said with "you're so smart." And so from his point of view, you know, or your point of view, it may look like Brad just told me or you that I'm so smart. And that's all it is. It's a sticker, but it looks just like a message. Or you could apply it in the middle section, you know, like just so, like I know it's hard to explain this over the podcast. There's be a link in the show notes to there's a really good article over at the Medium from one of the developers on the kind of the backstory of the app. And then once the original takedown letter was received by them and what they were, you know, their kind of options as far as do we take it down and change it, or do we get it pulled, things like that. It's a really good, really good little read.
We'll put a link to that in the show notes. Maybe we'll put the image as well of us doing this. But, you know, I've bought apps like this before, but it's usually when they serve a really cool utility. There was an app back in January called Video that allowed you to record your iPad or iOS device, right? You could sit there and you know, sort of make like a video of everything you were doing as you did it. To me, that was really cool. I think they faked an AirPlay device and redirected it back to itself or something. It was kind of cool. Got pulled like the next day. It was like a $5 app. I bought it. Sometimes you'll see people who will sell like a flashlight app, and it has a Nintendo emulator built into it. Things like that. So stuff that you know is going to get pulled, but hey, you know, it's utility. I'll do it. So I kind of get it. This just seems like, you know, yeah, it's kind of neat, but I don't know. If they know it's going to get pulled, It seems weird that they even go to the trouble of making something. At least those other things.
Maybe they're trying to just get away with something or see how far they could get with it.
Yeah, probably, but...
If you see how simple it is, it couldn't have taken somebody more than a day to put this together. I mean, it probably took them longer to decide on what, you know, 20-ish sayings they wanted to include in there and how much they thought they could get away with. Because if they really wanted to really push it, then these messages would have been a lot more obscene than they are, because none of them are obscene now. I think, like I said, the most obscene of any of them is the one I mentioned earlier, which is, oops, I just pooped my pants, which, you know, that's funny in any language. So
what's funny is that on the iPhone itself, it shows up as sticker by phonies. So it's not like you don't know that something happened, right? They do identify it. Now on the Apple Watch and on the Mac, that doesn't happen. It's just an overlay. So that's kind of weird. Depending on which device you look at it on, you'll see that it's fake or not.
I think if you own the app as well, then that designation doesn't show up. But that kind of also defeats the purpose. If they own the app, then they know it exists, so you can't fool them. So, but I think if you both own the sticker set, it doesn't tell you where it came from, because it's just telling y'all where it came from. So if you want to go get the stickers, you can.
Ah, that's pretty clever. I didn't realize that. So the last thing this week I think we have time for is another thing that's really kind of strange that popped up is my favorite accessory maker 12 South, who I own several of their products, the Plug Bug, the Hi-Rise stand, and a few other things that they make. The Book Arc is another thing that I own of theirs. They announced that they have made a new Mac scented candle that you can burn if you want your house to smell like a new Mac. I'm not exactly sure how they arrived at what a new Mac smells like.
Seems like it would just smell like cellophane, because that's what I usually smell, is the clear cellophane you peel off of the outside of the new device.
I think it's pretty cool, and I think my little high-rise apartment definitely needs one of those candles.
Yeah, they just for the novelty factor, I'm kind of, and plus I like the company, so I'm inclined to buy their stuff. But I'm kind of curious about it and want to buy it. According to the website, it's a feature of mint, peach, basil, lavender, mandarin, and sage, which somehow magically combines to mimic the smell of a new Mac. New car smell I've heard of. I've never heard of anything with a new Mac, so this is kind of weird.
Being the single one of the three of us, I'm thinking if I have, you know, if the lady is nerdy enough and she comes back and I've got a new Mac scented candle, you know, imagine what that can do for a guy, right?
Oh, of course, that's better than Axe body spray.
That doesn't work.
At $24, it's temporarily sold out. So they're also a Southern company. They're over in South Carolina, so they're not that far from me. I found that out when I bought the Book Arc from them recently. Even though I'd been buying their products for a long time, I didn't realize they were just one state over.
That's cool. I wasn't aware of that either. And I think for most guys, if you said a candle costs $24, they'd actually freak out. But having been married as long as I was, $24 is probably about standard for a decent size candle.
Oh yeah, I have tons of those, and actually I've learned to appreciate being able to change the smell of your house on a whim. So yeah, it looks like being a South Carolina company, their website says because of Hurricane Matthew, their warehouse is closed until at least next week.
Yeah, just sending thoughts out to everybody out in Florida and South Carolina, South Georgia. I went through a whole lot with Hurricane Katrina 12 years ago, so I definitely am feeling the pain that they're about to go through and everything. So it's really crazy stuff.
Yes, I hope all those folks who are impacted, please evacuate. Do not stick around. Get out of there as quickly as possible, because it's no fun. Well, I think that's about all the time we have for this week. Have a lot of stuff we didn't get to, but we'll do it next week. You guys have any big plans this weekend?
I think we have another soccer tournament.
So that's a no from you, Brad. What about you, Jim?
Indeed.
I do have big plans this weekend. I am headed down to Austin tomorrow morning, Austin, Texas. I'll be working from the office down there tomorrow. And then tomorrow night, I will start attending the ACL Fest in Austin this weekend. So Radiohead is headlining tomorrow night. Mumford & Sons is playing Sunday night. And I'm also super excited, probably the most excited of all, to see Willie Nelson on Sunday afternoon. I've never seen Willie live, so I'm really looking forward to that. And, you know, and there's a ton of other acts, electronica, indie, rock, all kind of stuff that I'm really excited to go see. But Willie Nelson on Sunday in Austin, Texas just sounds perfect.
Yeah, that does sound pretty cool. I'm headed to Nashville this weekend myself, though. You're definitely going to have probably the most interesting weekend out of the three of us. And yeah, Willie Nelson, that'll be cool. He's in his 80s now. So it's anyone tells you drugs are bad, apparently they're not. Whenever I think of Willie Nelson, I always think of that old Sam Kinison bit where back when Willie owed taxes in the middle of the early 90s, where it was like, no, Willie, you don't owe Texas, you owe taxes. Oh, man, I threw that party every year for free.
I just want him to wheel him out and let him sing. You know, I just to hear live Willie would be great. And like I said, the other bands too, Radiohead, Mumford & Sons, Kendrick Lamar, all kind of good stuff this weekend.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be a blast. Well, I think that's it for us this week, and I guess we will talk to you guys next week.
Later on.
Later.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. We can be found on Twitter. I'm at Brian B. That's B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's B-I-G-J-I-M. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we hope to talk to you next time.